This is KUT. On Monday, we reported that Austin police have investigated 7 cases of alleged sexual assaults by drivers for ride-sharing companies such as Uber and Lyft this year. Sexual assault allegations have been made against 3 drivers of traditional cabs in that time. That's one reason sexual assault prevention groups support a proposal up at the Austin City Council today, requiring fingerprint background checks for Uber and Lyft drivers. Those checks are already required for traditional cab drivers. After the story aired, KUT's Kate McGee got in touch with a woman who was sexually assaulted by a Lyft driver 6 months ago and is sharing her story. A warning, this story deals with sensitive topics and may not be suitable for all listeners.
Meet Molly.
I'm 26 and I live in Austin.
We're not using Molly's last name for privacy reasons. Molly was laid off from her job in April of this year. She was given a severance package, but
I felt like I needed a little bit of something just to do to keep myself occupied while looking for a new job.
So she signed up to drive for both transportation network companies, or TNCs, in Austin, Uber and Lyft.
The one thing that Lyft does is they have you meet with an experienced driver. And so in late May, after I'd signed up, I met with this experienced driver. I was meeting him at the Whole Foods at the Domain.
Drivers are independent contractors, not Lyft employees. The meeting started out normal. He inspected her car and said he had a few questions.
And that's where things got really inappropriate.
He told Molly about how when women drink, they can't say no.
He talked about women pleasuring themselves in his car and touching him. It was really uncomfortable.
Molly says the man told her she needed to be outgoing and friendly when driving for Uber and Lyft.
So if I find myself, you know, feeling down one day, I should pleasure myself before going out and driving. And then he said, I'm going to get inappropriate with you. And in my head, I'm thinking, you've already crossed that line. Like, what else is there? And then he said, imagine that somebody gets into your car and does this. And then he made this demonstration and he began to touch me. He rubbed my arms first, then across my chest and on my breasts. He rubbed my upper thighs. And then he stopped and he continued talking, but I didn't really know what he was saying. It was all just kind of a blur. I wanted him to get out of my car. I just wanted to kind of explode out of my skin and be anybody but the person that this guy just touched.
Then he showed Molly how to use the Lyft mobile app. When you use these apps, passengers can rate drivers on a 1 to 5 star scale, and drivers can rate passengers.
Because I was technically giving him a ride during the mentor orientation, we had to rate each other. And he had me get out my phone and he said, now give me 5 stars. So I gave him the 5 stars, and that 5 stars actually keeps him on the road, keeps him driving, keeps him riding, keeps him in this position of power.
The inspection ended, and Molly drove away. She didn't notice she was crying until she looked down and saw her hands were shaking on the steering wheel.
And I was just trying to imagine, how am I going to tell, you know, people that I love? How do I live with myself moving forward, knowing that I didn't get out of the car, or I didn't say something, or I didn't run away, or I didn't, you know, in all of the ways that you think you might react in that situation, why didn't I do that?
Molly reached out to an online Lyft community board asking people what she should do. Lyft saw her post and responded to her within the hour. The next day, someone from the company called her.
They had one consistent person talking to me, so I didn't have to tell the story over and over and over again.
The woman from Lyft told her they disabled the driver's account, which the company confirmed with KUT. Then Molly received a message on the same online community board. It was from her mentor driver.
It was sickening. I didn't want him to message me. You know, the last, there's some things I think where apologies just can't heal. And he just needed to disappear. And he didn't do it. He came back, and it just felt like a violation.
In the note, the man apologized for making what he called crass and inappropriate jokes. Quote, I had just done another session with someone who joked with me a lot, and I guess I was still in that mindset. He wrote that it was not his intention to make her feel bad, and he wanted to say he was sorry.
But he didn't mention inappropriately touching me basically assaulting me. He didn't mention that. That really bothered me as well.
A message KUT sent to the driver's account on the message board was not returned by deadline. Molly says she thought a lot about filing a police report, but when she told people what happened,
there was almost this air of, well, it could have been worse. You know, it wasn't that bad. And so even if that wasn't the intention, it still diminished, in my opinion, what happened to me. It made me feel like, well, why can't you just get over it?
Molly says she's still considering filing a police report. She's not alone in her hesitation. Sexual assault is one of the most underreported crimes. According to the National Institute of Justice, only 26% of sexual assaults between 1992 and 2000 were reported to police. UT Austin professor Noelle Bush Armendariz studies sexual assault. She says there are many reasons sexual assault survivors don't report to police.
They believe that the veracity of their story is going to be questioned. Coming through the criminal justice system, all the way through it, is very, very difficult. That often juries and judges and the general public want forensic evidence when forensic evidence is often not there.
Molly thought to herself, I got him off the Lyft platform. So she tried to not think about it anymore. Molly drove for Uber and Lyft for a month before she stopped.
I didn't like people being next to me. I didn't know.
The Austin City Council could vote today on new regulations for TNCs, including a proposal for mandatory fingerprint-based background checks for drivers. But Molly says to her, fingerprint background checks aren't enough.
Fingerprint and criminal background checks, they tell you what a person has been caught doing. They don't necessarily tell you what a person is capable or wants to do. There needs to be more screening from both organizations. Fingerprinting is the first step. But the second step is having direct contact with the people you're putting on the roads.
Molly says a fingerprint background check probably wouldn't have prevented her situation.
But I think had someone sat for 2 minutes and talked to this guy, he would not have ever been in that position.
Uber and Lyft both oppose fingerprint background checks. Lyft stands behind its current background check system, which checks municipal, county, state, and federal records. According to the company, 80% of its drivers are part-time, and the cost of fingerprinting could deter those drivers from signing up. Lyft does not operate in cities that require fingerprint background checks. Professor Noelle Bush Armendariz at UT says any information is good information if it keeps a community safe. But fingerprinting Uber and Lyft drivers won't end sexual assaults.
If we really want to do something about holding perpetrators and offenders accountable, we need to think from a community-wide perspective, really, how do we tackle that problem by telling ourselves the truth about underreporting, about how we treat victims in the criminal justice system.
Yesterday, Travis County Sheriff Greg Hamilton released a statement opposing the proposed regulations. He says TNCs have played a part in reducing DWIs in Austin, where drinking and driving is, quote, an epidemic. If the city council can't make a decision on the proposal today, the vote could be pushed back to January or beyond. Kate McGee, KUT News.